Hey, welcome to season three of the Fearless Women podcast. I'm Janice McDonald, creator, host, and executive producer of the show and global champion for women. Thank you for joining us every week as we bring you inspiring conversations with the unafraid. We're the source for authentic, true stories from remarkable women from around the world. If you love what you hear, tell your friends and share the love with a five-star rating. Sign up for our Stay Fearless newsletter. You'll get the inside scoop on all things fearless, like episode highlights, my personal reflections, and so much more. Subscribe with the link in the show notes and follow us on Instagram at Fearless Women Podcast. Remember to pick up a copy of my beautiful best-selling book, Fearless Girls with Dreams, Women with Vision, for more inspiring true stories. It's available everywhere. Enjoy the show and stay fearless. I am seriously excited to welcome my next guest to the show. She's an important and trusted voice in Canada. It's Lisa Laflamme. Let me tell you just a little bit about her, because if I do the whole bio, that's the show. So she's the chief anchor and senior editor of CTV National News in Canada. She's had an impressive career and she's just getting started, but her career has seen her cover many international events and conflicts, including September 11th attacks, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, Arab Spring in Cairo, Hurricane Katrina, the 2010 Haiti earthquake, and that's just to name a few. She's also covered every Canadian federal election since 1997, every Olympic game since 2006. She covered the Diamond Jubilee of Queen Elizabeth II, the royal wedding of Prince William and Catherine Middleton, and of course, the royal wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. She's going to talk about her incredible career so far and so much more. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Janice. It's great to speak to you today. Although I have to say, when you say I'm just getting started, I'm not so sure about that after 33 years.
You're a trailblazer. You are just setting the pace. So first off, let's talk about the pandemic. Okay, it's been challenging, obviously, for everyone, but perhaps even more so for someone like yourself who's in the public eye. I know when I've been on TV, it's quite a production to get ready for a show, hair, makeup, all of that. So tell us about the year that's been so far for you. And can we talk about the attention you received? I'm thinking about, for example, the Globe and Mail. There was an article, "The Silver Lining to Letting Our Gray Hairs Flourish During the Pandemic."
Yeah, well, the gray hair was just an accident of the pandemic, to be honest. But, you know, I can't even believe we're at the basically at the year mark now, mm-hmm. coming up on it. And I think back to, you know, I was in last January, I was in Auschwitz covering the 75th anniversary of the liberation of the camp. And we were covering Brexit in the UK and we were doing all these international stories. And then all of a sudden, there's this story creeping up to the lead, this COVID situation. Some, they didn't even call it COVID at the time, but Wuhan, China, a place few had ever heard of, and this mysterious virus. And it just kind of grew and grew and grew. And then, boom, we were sending people home in our newsroom. We were sending laptops home. We were in a heaving newsroom that within a matter of days was down to a skeletal staff, which it still is to this day. And the incredible challenge in those early days to really figure out how to do our jobs under these strange circumstances, how to get information. If you recall, we were all sort of learning as we were going. And in those days, for the first two full months, I actually went into work every day at 8 a.m. We did a morning show that would morph into a 90-minute show and stay there and do the 11 o'clock news. So for 2 months, it was really around the clock. And then things seemed, if we all recall, to calm down a little bit when the spring arrived and early summer, and it sort of felt like we were getting a day pass. And then boom, September rolled around and we're right back in it again. So it has flown by on some levels and it has seemed like 100 years on another level, but it's been an enormous challenge. and really almost inspiring, if I can use that word, just to see how a very small news team, which the CTV national news team is, can still get the information out, bring Canadians the news they need under, as I say, these extremely strict restrictions under which we've been working.
And yet people just want to talk about your hair.
Well, isn't that a strange thing? I mean, maybe it's something we all can understand. And the pandemic and COVID is something that has been so confusing and challenging for all of us as a complete abutment to the lives we were all living. So maybe hair just becomes this metaphor for, oh yeah, I know what it's like to have to dye my roots every 3 weeks. She's not doing it anymore. But it was a very funny, if you want to know, it was a funny transition because, as I said, I'd been traveling so much before the first lockdown that I did not have time to do my roots. And I was an every 3 weeker. And I was spraying the roots for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And in the early part of the pandemic. And then one day I just said, this is crazy. This is not a priority for me. And why am I doing this? I'm with Canadians now every day from the minute they wake up to the minute they go to bed. They're going to just see it, warts and all. And here we are a year later. And, you know, I have to say, I really feel liberated, if I can put it that way, to not have to worry anymore about roots. I know that sounds so simplistic under the circumstances of what we're all living, but you asked, and Canadians obviously were curious. I've had so much support from women, though. That's been a really incredible thing. Just inundated with amazing supportive comments, because I think any woman who has gone gray does say, whoa, who, you know, you don't even recognize yourself in the mirror anymore. And then boom, one day you just get used to it and you're a gray-haired lady. So there you go.
And everybody else gets used to it too.
Yeah, that's the truth.
So here you are, you're a trusted voice in Canada. You're, you know, so familiar and we look to you, and yet you still are a person. So what happens, Lisa, when you go to the grocery store and people want to tell you about your hair and other things?
Oh, you know, I first of all, I've lived in the same neighborhood for 20 odd years. So everyone in my neighborhood is nothing. You know, they're so used to seeing me walk my dogs in the neighborhood and go to the shops. But it's always lovely if somebody stops. Just the other day, funny, speaking of hair, the other day I was walking down Yonge Street and I had my, you know, I was listening to a podcast. I had a hat on, a mask on. I can't imagine how anybody could have possibly even recognized me. And a woman stopped me and said, oh, I want you to know, I just love you. My husband and I go to bed with you every night, which is a line I've heard a few times and I laugh every time, but you know, it's very lovely. And obviously I'm in a privileged position and I understand the responsibility attached to that, that Canadians do trust me. And I know that is not something like you have to earn that. And, and I feel like even though it's television and you don't actually see the viewer, there is a connection. And I feel it luckily wherever I go in this country, it's people are very generous. They don't whip tomatoes at me. They're nasty and awful on Twitter. I will say that has become just a sewer, but in real life, they're lovely.
Well, and because, you know, as I mentioned in introducing you, everything that's important in the world that we as Canadians experience, you're the person telling us about it, you know, so there is that feeling of trust and closeness to you. Can you take us back, though, to the start of your career, copywriter, script assistant? What were those early days like? And did you imagine you'd end up where you are now?
Oh, wow. Short answer to that is absolutely not. I mean, when I studied journalism, I went to University of Ottawa. I knew I wanted to be a journalist since I was a kid. I was always writing. And I guess I didn't know it was a journalist, but as a grade schooler, I literally remember just writing all the time. And then, you know, I lived in France for 2 years. My parents ultimately came to France and said, okay, if you're going to get to university, you better get a move on. So I went to University of Ottawa. And of course, the year I graduated, which was 1988, there had been mass layoffs in the industry, which is still a very familiar tale today. And I just tried so hard to get a job. It was almost impossible at that time. And the only thing I actually applied to law school. I thought, well, I guess this dream isn't going to happen. I was accepted into law school in July of that summer. And then in August, I was given a job 4 hours on a Saturday and 4 hours on a Sunday, writing international copy, 15-second copy stories, and ripping scripts and running scripts to the anchor and to the director. And I said, okay, you know what? 4 hours on a Saturday, 4 hours on a Sunday, I'm going to throw over the idea of law school and stick with this. And I'm obviously grateful I did. I was working in a local television station, which was attached to a radio station. So they gave me an opportunity to be a radio reporter first, which is how I ultimately started on air. And it was, as I said, in the same newsroom. So one Saturday, I finished my 4 a.m. shift at noon, and the TV news director says, or assignment editor says, you know, so-and-so is called in sick. Can you fill in tonight for television? What? I mean, I had never been on TV. I'd make the emergency phone call to my mother and all of my sisters. I'm going to be on TV. I've got to do a story. And it's so funny. My very first television story was covering a Saturday night Kitchener, Waterloo, covering a psychic fair at the Hoother Hotel, which is a hotel I'd gone to with all my friends every Thursday night. And now it ends up being the backdrop for my very first TV story. And I got my sisters there and my friends there just as moral support. And, you know, I find that a very interesting beginning, because I had talk about participatory journalism. That night, I was, what, 24? I had my cards read or my palm read or something, and they saw flags of the world. And honestly, wow. I thought back at that so many times that indeed I have had this incredible opportunity to see the world, and at its darkest and its happiest moments. And but it started there. So I moved on from there into television reporting and documentary making, and, you know, sort of a high back then you were had to be a hybrid. There was no woman who was just a reporter. We also had to anchor, which is funny today, but that was the way it was then. So I guess I'm grateful. I learned very, very early on in my career how to just try to be yourself with whatever you're doing, reporting or anchoring. And it's done me well over these many years.
So for those that want to get ahead, just get your cards or your palm read.
That's the moral of this story.
So, you know, you talked about being a witness to incredible things, dark and inspiring. What have you learned from, you know, about the world or about people from these experiences? And, you know, is there something that of all these remarkable things that you've reported on, is there something that stands out the most for you?
Boy, that is a very big question, Jen. Yes. I've learned so much. I mean, obviously, everything I know is inspired by the places I've been and the people, most importantly, that I've met. I think if there's one overriding thing I've learned, it's that even when you are at your most oppressed, and I'm thinking of the people, mostly women and girls I've interviewed, you know, from Kandahar to Baghdad to the Democratic Republic of Congo in Goma, war zones, Cairo, that there is optimism. Even when it looks like everything is lost, human spirit does rise above. I mean, we're seeing it now during this pandemic. There are certainly moments where, you know, people would not be proud of how they've behaved, but ultimately, we are a collective, and I have to say that is my overriding feeling about just life, that we are strong enough. Each one of us is strong enough, and we just have to remain focused. And I think of those girls so much that I've covered. And now they're all wonderful working women trying to work in countries where it's not so obvious. I mean, just yesterday, three young female journalists in Jalalabad were murdered. And I think, you know, this is they do it because it's worth the risk for them. That's their life. I get to get on an airplane and, well, back in the days when we got to fly, but, you know, and fly home. But it never leaves you. It absolutely never leaves you.
So you talk about that feeling of hope and remembering those women and particularly the young girls. Take us back to your 10-year-old self. Where were you living? We know you were into writing and, you know, you had visions of reporting, even if you didn't know what that journalist was. But what else were you into?
Wow, my 10-year-old self. Well, I grew up in Kitchener, Ontario. I have three sisters. I'm the middle child, so full on middle child syndrome.
Look at me.
Yeah. No, the peacemaker. Come on. I've always said that,
no, of course.
Have to be the peacemaker in the middle.
I'm a middle child.
So,
I know.
Are you? So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Too.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So interestingly now, it's only that you're asking. I think about this as a kid. I found myself I was probably a big mouth in my family. I was probably the one who got clipped on the ear most for, you know, trying to confront my parents on various issues. But I did get into public speaking, not because I knew that's what I was doing, but because I was writing. So I would write these speeches. Back then in grade school, you used to do, you know, you'd go it became a provincial contest to, I don't know if you remember those days, public speaking contests. And and I ultimately was in a lot of public speaking contests. I was a singer as a kid my whole life. And so I was in Kiwanis music festivals again my whole childhood. And I remember, you know, moments sort of jump out at me. I remember, you know, seeing my parents. I'm getting emotional. I remember those days though, and my mother making me a beautiful dress to perform, and you know, it was just a simple beautiful time. But it's interesting, when I look now, I think, wow, I guess some of the things I learned then about singing from the diaphragm or public speaking, they serve me well today. I mean, I'm sure my newsroom colleagues don't love that I still bust out in song whenever I'm at my most stressed, but so that's
show tunes come out and jazz hands.
Oh, full on jazz hands. But so as a 10-year-old, I think I was very involved in everything, music, speaking, sports, not in a obnoxious way. We were not a family where we went to Saturday morning pottery and we went to swimming lessons. We were not that family where the kids were going to this, that, and the other thing. It wasn't like that back in those days.
Well, we didn't have as many things either to go to.
We didn't. That's exactly right. So these were just things that the school, it was all based on the school. And your school said, let's, you know, write a speech and present it. And if you move to the next level, boom. And the next thing you know, you're sitting in an auditorium in Toronto, speaking to hundreds of people, and your legs are shaking. So I learned a lot about managing nervousness as a kid. And I still am nervous to this day. It's just part of who I am. You know, every day I feel like it's just because it's important. You know, it's important, and I never take anything for granted. So I'm not upset that I'm someone who gets nervous before a big 7-hour network special on an inauguration or a this or a that. It's just who I've always been.
Yeah. And I really see it similarly in that it's a clear indication that it's important to you.
It is. I mean, it's everything to me, really, because all we have is all I have is my integrity, and it's what I've been raised, the values I've been raised to believe in. And now I bring that to the job I do, which is so bound with having people trust you, as you said earlier. And it's not something I take lightly.
Sounds like your parents, you've got a great relationship with them. You've been close to them. They've traveled to France to, you know, be close to you. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Oh, my parents really, my father sadly passed away 11 years ago, which still is, he's with us every single day though. He was very pivotal person in our lives. And it's, you know, the kind of thing where you say, even if somebody lives to be 100, it's still too soon to leave. And he was that person for all of us. And my mother has just always been this incredibly strong woman, intelligent, always. I think on some levels, my news interest comes from both of them, because they were both newspaper readers every day, radio, talk shows, this kind of thing. And I remember as a kid coming home for lunch from school and watching, you know, the new news every day, talking to my father about what was on the morning talk shows on the CFRB radio. And, you know, these are just sort of the foundation they gave us. And I don't know what to say, except that, you know, my mom is now such a strong figure in my life and all of our lives, my sisters and I, and she's really given us strength. I think we are strong women because of her strength. She's British. She came to this country when she was a young woman. And I imagine so often how challenging it would have been for her to leave her whole family back in London. And, you know, but now, you know, we travel there all the time. We know them so well, and it's just made our family more interesting and wider to have all these relatives in London and other places. So they gave me the tools I needed to, you know, never get it. My mother always said, never get ahead of your station. And I think of that all the time. It's a very important lesson. Just keep perspective on where you are and the challenges that are out there.
So we know she clearly a fearless woman coming over to a new country. You've done so many remarkable things. If you had to pick one, can you highlight a time that in your view, you were fearless? Lisa, aside from standing up and winning, you know, the public speaking contest, is there something else that comes to mind for you that you say, that stands out?
Funny, you don't think of when you're doing something, you don't actually think of it as being fearless. But I mean, I suppose covering war zones was in the beginning, the first time I went to Baghdad, of which I went many times subsequently, but was 2003 after the US invasion. And then obviously into Kandahar for many more years, various war zones. I think I don't think of it as fearless. I think of it as the benefit of being able to highlight those people who don't have an opportunity to share their story. That is the benefit that outweighed the risk. I've had I've had terrifying experiences with my cameraman where we, you know, I'll never forget walking through a poppy field with behind the Canadian soldiers. And you never wanted to be a liability when you covered the military. But all of a sudden, small arms fire breaks out and you're on the ground. And literally, I remember thinking, oh, whoa, is this where I'm supposed to die, in the middle of a poppy field in Kandahar? I didn't imagine that. Or another time I was flying from Amman to Baghdad and we were just hovering over the Baghdad airport and surface to air missile up in the air and boom, you've never seen a plane turn around so fast. And we flew back to Amman. Like, those are moments that come back to me. And because those were moments where you almost feel most alive when you are closest to death. It's a strange thing to explain. But as I said, on the ground, when you're doing these things and you're driving through these cities and checkpoints and there's, you know, insurgents behind every corner in your brain, but you think, I am on my way to a school right now to interview a bunch of girls who are brave enough to go to school under these circumstances. So I am brave enough to go to their school and talk to them so that Canadians can see there is hope. Even in Afghanistan at its darkest Taliban days, there is hope. So I don't know if that's a fearlessness, but it's certainly moments where I have felt fear many times. I remember being in Baghdad on an election day one year and we get pulled over. And it was a US military Marine holds a gun to my temple. And I'm looking at his face literally. And he's got to be 18, 19 years old, more afraid than I am. with a gun to my head. And I'm saying, you know, we're Canadian journalists. We're here to cover the election. We had all the permits we needed. And I remember just keep smiling, just keep smiling. Don't lose your cool. This guy is more, and turns out subsequently I spoke to him, and this is a reservist who was worked in a McDonald's in Oklahoma. And then one day gets a call, you're going to Baghdad. So I think about that too, his life and how afraid he was to be doing what he was doing. Okay, it was misguided to be holding a gun to a journalist's head, but they didn't know back then. It was all fear all around all the time. And it was just about trying to get through, get your story, get the information out and live.
Wow. It's so incredible, Lisa. So if you think about, these are the harrowing things that you've lived through in pursuit of the truth. What about, you know, the changing landscape now of reporting and storytelling? And if we look at the impact of technology, and you've referenced social media as well, there's advancements in audio and video. It can be hard for people to discern the truth, fake news, et cetera. What's your view on where things are going in terms of technology and how it impacts stories?
Well, I mean, obviously it is the most troubling trend of our times. The power and the platform conspiracy theorists have, the fact that misinformation becomes fact on various social media platforms. And I worry about it. It is a very big focus in my life to try to speak to young people about checking your sources, figuring out the difference between legitimate news sources and some crazy guy in his parents' basement coming up with stuff. I mean, we've watched this grow. We've watched it grow over years, and constantly still coming across racism and hateful comments online. And now my job on some level is to expose that so that people can see that is misinformation. It's not easy. Believe me, we are coming up against a wall in this industry. And as I watch conventional media shrink because of layoffs and a challenging time, the pandemic has certainly not helped on any level. It's hurt it. I realize there are fewer people now trying to fight against the influences that are trying to turn the public against the truth. Who would have ever dreamed that this could be a fact? And yet it is a fact that we see every single day misinformation as a headline somewhere. Now, I am not on Facebook. I should say that intentionally I'm not on it, but that doesn't mean I'm not completely aware of how it works and how misinformation grows in a heartbeat. And the responsibility of some of these tech giants to take control of the sites. We saw it happen during this most recent US election, and some positive moves in banning Twitter feeds that are just, you know, just dripping in hate and lies. There is a lot more work to be done, and it's everybody's responsibility. Everybody, every single person's responsibility is to call it out when they see it. You don't have to be a journalist to do that. In fact, it might even be more powerful if your friends see it. If you're not a journalist, you're whatever, and you just say to your friends, "This is not true." You know, people need their own set of peers to correct wrongs as well, and It's a massive problem we have right now, and not one, as I say, that we dismiss, not at all. I think about it so often. Media literacy is as important. I say this all the time, but media literacy is as important as math. And we need more ways for the public to discern truth and fiction, because there is very dastardly teams out there trying to get misinformation to stick in the brain of the public. And it's difficult, but we can do it. I mean, we'll overcome it. I mean, we will. We are overcoming it on some level, but boy, is it a Kilimanjaro we're trying to climb here.
There's also, I think particularly for women, and you referenced it earlier on Twitter, you know, there's a lot of keyboard courage.
That, what a great line. Wow.
You know, right? That people are so willing to come directly at a public figure. And I think it impacts too women's willingness, whether it's to put their hat in the ring and stand out front. Challenging for sure in those times.
It is. And I think social media, that's true. There's no doubt about it. Female journalists definitely are the target more than men. It's obvious. You just go through my Twitter feed, you'll see it. The only thing I say to young female journalists is dismiss it. Don't internalize it. This is just, as you say, keyboard courage is a great way to put it. But it is another way of just trying to undermine people whose it just happens to be our job to report on events around the world and around our own country, or our own community. And it's nasty. It always has been. I think forever women have been had a rougher ride than men in this industry. And that hasn't changed totally. It has changed on many levels, but not totally. And now it's just the anonymous on Twitter. And personally, I now just don't even pay attention to it. But in the beginning, it was really hard. You know, I wanted to participate. I wanted to do that. I wanted to elevate the conversation on Twitter. And then I thought, this is crazy. There's too much room for the ugliness to seep in, unverified facts and hate. And I don't know. I don't need that. There's enough negativity in the world. And I feel like the minute I wake up in the morning and look at my phone right there in my own bed, do I want to look at a Twitter feed that's going to tell me how, you know, I'm this, that, or the other? No. So It took me time, though. It's not something, because none of us wants to be hated or criticized, do we?
No.
So when it comes from this kind of a pig pen, I'll call it, you just have to put it in its place. And that is an education, and it is a process, I would say, for women.
So if you could go back in time, because you've had so many remarkable experiences, is there one that you'd want to slow down and relive?
Oh, wow. You're going to make me cry again. Oh, lots of things. I mean, every experience, you know, if you can go all the way back to child time with my father before he died, you know, all of that. But and when it comes to my experiences in covering stories around the world, you work 20-hour days that your head is just so down working that I wish I could slow all of those experiences down and see these places with more time on my hands. I guess that's the thing that has been a real challenge. Everything is just at breakneck speed, including right now. Even though it feels like the world stopped for the last year, on no level has that happened for journalists around the world trying to keep up with it, for obviously medical officers of health trying to keep up with it, governments on every level. So I would slow those things down and try to work less, perhaps, and have enjoyed a few more moments during those experiences. But, you know, I always think one day I'll go back to those places and experience them not working. And I look forward to that day.
So final question, Lisa, what's your dream for Canada?
My dream for Canada. Well, I think we're on we're on a great track right now. My dream for Canada would be that we would become a more inclusive country. I think we're learning more and more and more and more about Indigenous communities, the challenges they face. To have full equality in this country is my dream. But that we become more of a collective on that front. But I think I have to say, having been out of this country so much, every time I land at Pearson, I remember a long time ago coming out of Baghdad and getting to the airport and realizing, oh my goodness, there are no armed military here with AK-47s. I mean, we live in such an amazing, free country. You think of this pandemic, really, Canadians have been able to get through this perhaps much easier, no doubt about it, than so much of the world where they still don't even have one vaccine. So I think my dream is just that we're always attentive of others and more open to the multiculturalism that has made Canada so beautiful. And as we move forward, that becomes not even a topic of debate anymore, just a given.
It's a beautiful dream for Canada. You have been listening to the incredible, inspiring, remarkable Lisa LaFlemme. She is an important and trusted voice in Canada as the chief anchor and senior editor of CTV National News. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Lisa. I hope you'll promise to come back again in the future. You're always welcome on the Fearless Women podcast.
Well, when you call it Fearless Women, honestly, that is a magnet. And I've loved talking to you today, Janice. So absolutely, I'll be back.
Thank you again so much, Lisa.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Thanks again to our amazing sponsors, BDC, Lockheed Martin, and Export Development Canada. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to Export Development Canada, the international risk experts, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. Supporting Canadian companies of all sizes succeed on the world stage, EDC takes your worries away and helps you grow your business with confidence. When your business has no borders, neither does your potential. Find out more at edc.ca/women in trade. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.